Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the AMSSM Sports Medcast, produced in collaboration with the BJSM. I'm your host, Dr. Jake Wessels, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Jonathan Finoff. Greetings, Dr. Finoff.
Hey, Jake, it's good to see you.
Thanks for coming in today. Dr. Finoff is a physical medicine and rehabilitation and sports medicine physician. He's a clinical professor at the University of Colorado and the chief medical officer of the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. He is a former fellowship director and recently elected the second vice president of AMSSM. He is a pioneer in sports ultrasound and currently implementing new strategies for physical and mental health in elite Olympic athletes. And Dr. Finoff is giving the presidential keynote address on Sunday, April 14th at the AMSSM annual meeting in regards to his work as CMO and his leadership position in the U.S. OPC. Well, this is pretty exciting to get to talk with you today about this. Tell me more about your work. You know, you've overseen a global pandemic right when you came in as CMO. So tell me about some of the implementations and your vision that you had with being a CMO with the mental and physical health of our elite athletes.
Absolutely. Well, first off, Jake, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. I'm really excited to be here and talk with you. When I accepted this position, it was before SARS-CoV-2 had even been discovered. So it certainly was not on my radar that my first days were really going to be dealing with the pandemic and all the implications in elite sport and in the Olympics and Paralympics in particular. So obviously, a lot of what I did initially was try to lead the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, as well as provide advice to national governing bodies, which are our sports federations in the U.S., on how to safely train and compete during this global pandemic. Thankfully, that has wound down and things are going a lot better. And so I've been able to really redirect my attention to the things that I wanted to do originally when I assumed this position. So having come from the national governing body side, I realized that there was not a super close relationship between many of the national governing body medical teams and the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee medical group. And I felt like it's really important for us to create one community, a Team USA community, where we're all striving for the health and well-being of the Team USA athletes, both Olympic and Paralympic. So one of my first initiatives was trying to identify all of the national governing body leads. And as I was going through and doing that work, I found that a lot of the national governing bodies did not actually have a medical lead. And those who were in place, there was not a good reporting structure. There were not clearly defined roles and responsibilities. And so it was really challenging for them to know exactly what they should be doing. And then the medical infrastructure in each NGB was quite different. With many of the elite athletes not getting pre-participation physicals, there wasn't a standardized emergency action plan. Many NGBs didn't even have an emergency action plan. There certainly wasn't anything for a mental health emergency. So if you're in rural China at some type of meet in that or a competition and somebody is suicidal, what do you do? And there was no plan in place for most national governing bodies for that. And so one of my first big initiatives, and it's what I'm working on still, is establishing what are the minimum medical standards that NGBs should have in place, that infrastructure that they should have in place to provide good, solid care to their Team USA athletes. And then based on that, since that's most of the athletes live and train within their national governing body, and they come under my umbrella, mostly at the Olympic and Paralympic Games, but how can we as the USOPC serve as a safety net, provide a lot of resources for those national governing bodies, and then also convene them as a group so that they can work together more as a unified medical group as opposed to this NGB and that NGB and the USOPC and all of them working in their own silos.
Yeah, I bet. Like, it sounds like some didn't even have a setup on who was going to be the leader, much less interconnectedness on who would even, you know, between national governing bodies. So that sounds like a huge undertaking to work through that. Do you meet with the different heads or the people that you've identified to try to make a uniform, or is it more individualized per sport or situational for these emergency action and these kind of strategies?
So great question, Jake. I think that first off, you have to have good relationships with people. And so having some of that one-on-one contact is really, really important. Understanding their needs, their desires, their goals, the challenges that they're facing within their particular national governing body, understand more about their sports and their injuries and so on. But then bringing people together, convening larger groups and creating that community where people understand what each other are doing, learning from best practices, sharing resources, particularly between the national governing bodies that are better resourced than those that really have poor funding and less infrastructure. And there really are some disparities between national governing bodies. I have started convening all the national governing body medical leads on a quarterly basis for conference calls. And then we meet once a year in person for a half day. And then I do that in combination with a USOPC NGB medical conference, where we're having healthcare providers who are interested in working with the Olympic and Paralympic movement to come and learn predominantly about how to take care of athletes on the road. So it's a lot of emergency action planning, addressing athletes with exercise-associated collapse and all of the different things with that, but then also having those national governing bodies meet with the people who want to get involved so that now there's a bigger pool of people that the national governing bodies can recruit to work within the Olympic and Paralympic movement. Yeah, and so along those lines, establishing the NGB medical standards. So the way that we have gone about doing that, I think that as a leader, and this is something that I'm going to be talking about in the presidential lecture at the upcoming AMSSM meeting, I'm going to talk about leadership. But I think one of the big things to recognize as a leader is that you do not know everything. There are a lot of people who have amazing experience and experiences that you don't, and opinions that you don't have. And you need to hear all of those, and you need to work with all those people so that you come up with the best potential product, whatever it is that you're creating. So in this case, I went to chief medical officers for other National Olympic and National Paralympic committees around the world. I engaged International Federation chief medical officers, the IOC and IPC chief medical officers, and the National Governing Body chief medical officers. And I asked them all, what are the things that you think we should have in place for our national governing bodies to have a good, solid medical foundation, a good, solid medical infrastructure? So created a large master list of all of these things that people had provided to me. I also solicited that information from chief medical officers from professional sports in the US and collegiate sports. So really engaging all of the experts. And then I took this master list and I let both athletes as well, so your constituency, plus all the national governing body leads, vote on what things they thought were absolutely essential. So a must have, things that they should have, they're not essential, but they really should be in place. And then things that are nice to have. You don't have to have this, but if you've got the resources and it's relevant to your sport, then this is something that would be nice to have in place. And then I convened a smaller group that was 33% athletes, so a third athlete representation across winter, summer, Paralympic, Olympic, small and large national governing bodies, national governing body leads of about 50%, and then 17% USOPC medical personnel. And we went through and looked at these rankings that had happened after everybody voted on it. And we debated each one to determine, do we agree with how this was ranked? And if not, why not? And should it be shifted or should this actually be discarded from the document? After all of that had occurred, then we took it to Team USA Athletes Commission, which is the athlete leads, their representatives for every sport in the US, the NGB Council. So that is the chief executive officers, the CEOs for all the NGBs. Sport and Athlete Services within the USOPC and then the NGB Board of Governors, and had each of them provide feedback on it. Then after we had all that feedback, we did it one more time to the NGB medical leads to make sure everybody was okay, and we approved it. And so now it has been introduced to all of the NGBs saying, these are our recommendations of best practices. This is what you should have in play, you know, the must-haves, should-haves, and nice-to-haves. And now we are building out those resources. So that's the thing that we're starting to do now. And then in the next few years, we're going to help NGBs implement that. And then we're going to start doing assessments where we look at, where do you have gaps? How good are the concussion programs and other things that you've put in place? Are there things that we can improve upon? So again, you know, huge project, but this affects every sport in the US. I mean, even when we look at our traditional sports with baseball, football, soccer, and so on, you know, there's USA Soccer, USA Football, USA Basketball, and all of them feed up for your grassroots all the way up to your Olympic and Paralympic and your professional sports. And so this has truly huge impact within the US. And then if we are the leaders in sport, then it has global impact and hopefully will raise the bar of health and well-being for all athletes in the world.
You know, I have lots of questions about how, the nuances of it. One of the things I'm wondering about is, while you are working in this leadership role, were there things that you took from your skills that you had had prior, or were you learning some of this leadership skills on the fly? Was there any formal teaching that you had in this new role?
So that is another really good question. I think that all of us, of course, learn from our experience. And as you can see from my gray hair, which I know people on the podcast can't see it, but I've got plenty of gray. I've been around for a while and I've had a lot of different experiences and worked in a lot of different settings. And so learning from those different settings really helps. I have a lot of mentors that I call regularly to get advice. Many people have faced similar adversity and challenges that I have. And so hearing how they surmounted those makes a huge difference. And then I have had some formal training. So at Mayo Clinic, where I spent the majority of my career before coming here, they had several leadership programs. And in my leadership roles at Mayo Clinic, I was placed into those different leadership training programs. So I thought that was very helpful. And I've gone through several leadership training programs since I've been here at the USOPC over the last 4 years. So really gleaning knowledge from mentors, personal experience, educational programs, reading, listening to podcasts, and always just being curious and seeing how other people do it and trying to emulate those and learn from those that are doing a great job. I feel like that's how I've developed into who I am as a leader.
Very nice. Some of the things you mentioned were ways to, you know, use the medicine in the national governing body, having a little bit of structure on that. Are there parts of the things you've developed or, you know, lists of people or providers or expectations that are available to our audience if they're looking at ways to improve their colleges or their high school or their different levels that, you know, we might be lower down on the USOPC level, but we might be able to utilize some of these similar kind of expectations for a team? Are there things that are available? How can we learn more about what you've done this way? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, Jake. So I want all of this to be publicly available, and I want people to be able to try to apply it within their particular setting. So you can certainly go to our website, and if you Google USOPC Sports Medicine, it will pull up the website. The website for sports medicine is still under, there was a shift in our website, and so it's being rebuilt. But I want to have an educational area and have a lot of resources, both for athletes, but also for people who are in the medical profession, so that they are able to use some of the recommendations and guidelines that we have listed. So none of this is going to be proprietary, and we certainly want this to be publicly available and, again, benefit sport from the grassroots level all the way up to the elite level.
I think that sounds like you've worked really hard on adding some of those things. You know, a very systematic way to approach streamlining and connecting things that it seems very straightforward when you explain it, but I'm sure obviously it hasn't been done. Just a reminder to our listeners, Dr. Finoff is going to be giving a talk at our upcoming annual AMSSM conference in April. He'll be speaking on Sunday at noon, giving the presidential keynote address on this topic. One of the things that we've seen, Dr. Finoff, with our elite athletes is not only their physical health, but some of their mental health. How is mental health, you know, you're talking about these ways that you've created a structure in there. How is mental health, how have you emphasized that? You mentioned that being one of the things that you're interested in. How, tell me more about your strategy for mental health for our athletes, or how do we think about that?
That's a great question, Jake. You know, mental health is something that is super important to me, and it's been a focus since I arrived. Unfortunately, many of us have had tragedies with our athletes, whether it's somebody that gets hospitalized for an eating disorder that's caused, you know, cardiac arrhythmia, or it is somebody who has taken their life or attempted to take their life, it is unfortunately common. And so when I arrived at the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, that was one of the things that I was, it was top of mind, and I really wanted to work on that. And so I began investigating what was happening, and they were already starting to think about this, and they had an external task force and an internal task force that was thinking about this. But we had mental performance people, so sports psychologists, really focused on mental performance, but not necessarily mental health of the athletes. And it was limited. There weren't very many sports psychologists that we had. And so we weren't providing a large service, and it certainly wasn't comprehensive. And so over the last few, 4 years, we have developed what I truly believe is one of the best in the world psychological services programs, which combines both mental performance and mental health into one group within sports medicine. And we do a number of things to try to make this work. So number one, it's important to understand your athletes. So screening is really important. We use the Sport Mental Health Assessment Tool, or the SMAT, which was developed by the IOC. And so that's readily accessible to everybody. And it does a screening test. And if you score above a certain level, then it opens up six subcategories. So anxiety, depression, eating disorder, alcohol, drug abuse, and sleep. And they use validated questionnaires for each of these different things. And so if somebody scores above a certain level on the screening assessments, then we have one of our psychological services providers reach out to that individual and do a further assessment and determine, you know, are you having sleep difficulties, because it's right before a very, you know, it's the Olympic trials and it's really, everybody's going to have some sleep difficulties then. Or is this a problem that actually needs to be addressed? And then we connect the athletes with the appropriate resources, whether those are internal or external. We've gained a huge understanding of what our athletes' psychological stressors are, what their needs are, and then we've built out resources accordingly. One of the first things that we've done is, just because of those, you know, unfortunate tragic events that I was talking about before, one of the first things we did was develop mental health emergency action plans. And those mental health emergency action plans have been deployed at all three of our training centers. So Colorado Springs, Lake Placid, and Chula Vista, California. So it has a great flowchart of, if somebody has something that looks like that it might be in a mental health emergency or a crisis, then this is what you do. Here are the people that you contact, and so on. So we have those mental health emergency action plans, both for our training centers and at the games. We train everybody on that. We have created training programs to increase awareness of mental health problems for athletes, coaches, our staff, both medical and non-medical, in order to increase people's literacy on mental health conditions and also what they should do when they recognize that somebody might be having an emergency or a crisis. We have built out our psychological services teams. So we have, at this point, 14 psychological services providers. So any athlete that is in our top tier, so that's about 1,400 athletes in the United States, have access to these individuals. And for people who don't want to work with a psychological services provider within the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, we've created a registry that is actually externally facing. So Jake, your prior question about what resources are available for the community, you can go onto our website and you can click on our psychological services registry, and you can put in your state, and it'll give you a group of mental health providers or sports psychologists in that region, and what their subspecialty is. And all these people have been vetted. They have specific experience that meets our requirements, training, and so on. So that's great. And so athletes have access to that. We also have elite athlete health insurance that we provide. So we're self-insured, and we provide that health insurance to all of our elite athletes. And since we are self-insured, we have we cover 100% of mental health costs. So we try to eliminate any deterrent to an athlete seeking mental health services. And if they go to somebody that will only take cash, we actually have a mental health assistance fund where we will reimburse the athletes for their out-of-pocket expenses. We have a 24/7 mental health hotline that works anywhere in the world and can activate. Not only can they communicate with the athlete and help them through that crisis and connect them with the appropriate resources, they can activate emergency medical response anywhere in the world for a mental health crisis or emergency. We also have eHome, which is an online virtual counseling service that our athletes can access. We're trying to hit this from all sorts of different directions. So athletes get education. They have a lot of different ways that they can access healthcare providers, and those mental health care providers can be virtual, on the phone, in person, external, eliminating all of the costs associated with it, because we recognize this is a huge deal, and it really impacts people's performance and it impacts their lives. And so we want to make sure that we're doing the best we can for Team USA athletes.
You know, it's almost overwhelming for me to hear how many levels, you know, you had to think through to be able to, you know, I'm just thinking about implementation of all these different strategies. You know, I think that this is, first of all, it's definitely a needed thing. There's no question about that, that this was a critical first step, the emergency, you know, mental health action plan. Do you have takeaways, or, you know, I have more questions on how do I implement this in my, you know, setting as well? That's a thing that's always going to be a struggle. But I think the external facing list is really neat. What are the other things that you found to be that the athletes picked up or noticed? What feedback have you gotten from implementing this kind of thing?
So the athletes are really appreciative of it. So they're more willing to access all of this because now there are a lot of different ways that they can access it if they want to keep it very, very private versus they want to take advantage of resources that are in-house. The other thing is that we're destigmatizing it. And so it's enabling athletes to come forward and obtain the help that they need in order to be successful in life and in sport. And so I feel like the athletes are super appreciative of it. And kind of going back to resources that you can use, when I was talking about the NGB medical standards, one of the things that we say is a must have, you really need to have this, is a mental health emergency action plan. And this is something that whether you're taking care of high school sport or whether you're taking care of collegiate or professional, you really need to have a mental health emergency action plan. Part of the NGB medical standards is building out resources that people can use and implement within their communities. So there are examples and or templates that you can modify to create your own mental health emergency action plan. But similar to a standard emergency action plan where you could have a checklist and say, okay, if I'm going to go to this site, I'm going to look at where's the AED, what's the 911 number for this particular country, where's the closest hospital, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The same type of thing for mental health. Okay, if somebody is in crisis or if somebody is having a mental health emergency, then what is the emergency hotline? You know, in the United States, we have a different number than 911 for mental health emergencies. And so that's also common in other countries. What resources do you have built into your team? If you want to start doing screening to be proactive, I think the SMAT is a really good tool to use. The only thing I would say is that if you're going to screen, have a plan on how you're going to follow up. You know, it's just like if you do a pre-participation physical and somebody says they have palpitations and chest pain and, you know, a relative who died at 45 for unexplained, you know, reasons or whatever, you need to have a follow-up to make sure they don't have a cardiac condition that could lead to sudden cardiac death. If you're going to screen for mental health problems, you need to have the resources in place to follow up on that and to help those athletes. But it truly is imperative. And it's something that you can absolutely do. You know, you don't have to have all the things that we built out. Mental health emergency action plan, number one, that's the most important thing. And then the next thing you might want to consider is some education, like mental health first aid, which you can do online, and or some type of screening so that you can connect your athletes with resources before they're in emergency and crisis.
Now that also, some of those things are available now on the USOPC website, or they will be, you know, in the future.
So will be in the future. That's sort of the stage we're in with the NGB medical standards right now. We've got the standards. Now we're building out the resources that will be templates and or examples that people can use and modify it to fit within their particular situation.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I think that'll be a really big way to bolster, you know, people's confidence in their ability to implement that kind of stuff for their athletes and their community. So is there anything else we haven't covered, Dr. Finoff, that you want to make sure that our listeners hear?
No, I really appreciate the time, and I think it covered a lot of different subjects, but you know, I think AMSSM is a fantastic community, and we can all learn a lot by being members and active participants in American Medical Society for Sports Medicine. So that is one thing that I feel really helped me to achieve my career goals is being a member of AMSSM, not only getting the educational content, but meeting my mentors and learning within that organization. And that's helped me a lot in my career. And I would encourage people to be very active within AMSSM.
Well, that's a good segue for our listeners. For those who haven't signed up to come to the annual meeting, you still have time. This year's AMSSM meeting is in mid-April. Dr. Finoff, he'll be giving the presidential keynote address regarding some of this work and more on his role as CMO and a leader in USOPC. So that's the presidential keynote address on April 14th. So we look forward to seeing you, the listener, there and seeing what AMSSM annual meeting is all about. I'd like to thank you, the listener, for taking time out of your day to learn with me. And thank you, Dr. Finoff, for speaking with us. This was excellent learning we got today.
Thanks a lot, Jake. It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much. I look forward to having you back for the next edition of our AMSSM Sports Medcast.